This is a Hat Trick podcast.
Oh, lovely.
My name is David Silly. My job is medical officer for the British Antarctic Survey Medical Unit. The fur seal pups are one of the key moments over the summer period. We ended up with about 270 little pups along the track alone. We have to weigh the pups to see how the seal population is doing. So there was a team of 10 of us. We set off across to Myviken, which is about 6-7 kilometres from base. We call it Cardiac Hill, part of it, because it really gets your heart going. As we stepped down onto the beach, it was probably about a metre or so drop from the tussock down. I put my foot down. It slipped off some of the tussock. The first thing that came out of my mouth was to the team, I think I've broken my ankle. Everything kind of went silent initially whilst everyone was looking around like, what? The first kind of couple of minutes, I started feeling a little bit lightheaded, so I got them to find a suitable spot for me to kind of lie down on. And I just sat there, took in the moment, took in the beach where there was penguins and seals around. I had a couple of pups that came and gave me a cuddle. I still haven't held a pup in my hands.
Medic, this is Boss
Bar,
go ahead.
Pretty much the entirety of the team on the island was with me on the beach. So there was very limited people back over at base. Three people set off on a run to get back, and they made it back in pretty good time. And one of the guys is not a runner that went, and he managed to keep up with them. So fair play to him. Once they got back to base, they set off in a couple of boats to come around because there was no way of me getting back overland. I knew at that moment that I was leaving the island.
The Coldest Shift. Episode 8. King Edward Point.
Tell me about KEP. What's it like?
So the north coast of South Georgia looks very uninviting. It's got these really jagged rocks. It's got waves crashing against them. But as you get closer, each inlet has a little bay and it forms these beautiful natural harbours. The Antarctic base is called King Edward Point and it sits inside a bay within a bay. So in Cumberland Bay, there's an entrance and in there, there's two bays, east and west. And inside that bay itself is another cove. King Edward Point sits just inside King Edward Cove. On the actual base itself, there's a scattering of buildings. There's a boat shed, there's a couple of what they used to call manager's buildings, which are now just sort of accommodation that's used in busy months, busy being like 22, 23 people. The main building, which is where I was living, which got like the kitchen and the lounge and a bar, the hospital, a jail. All of those buildings would probably fit inside your local Tesco's. So on the ship, I would get out of bed, open my curtain, and turn left and open the door, and that was the hospital. Lovely commute at King Edward Point, South Georgia. My commute, I had to open the window, make sure the elephant seal wasn't watching me get dressed. The first day I opened the door to go outside to go to my new surgery, I've got this beautiful mountain all covered in shade. So then I walk along past the edge of the building and then you see the mountains all highlighted, the clouds, the snow, everything. Creep through the snow past the jail and then this sweet chirping of the penguins that live just outside the hospital welcoming you in on your first day to work.
Wow.
Then up the stairs into my new hospital. So it was a much, much longer commute, but I did come to terms with it quite quickly. So whilst I loved the hospital at the JCR because it was all very close and tied down, importantly, the hospital at KEP was very, very different.
So this is my new surgery. I've got an office.
As you go in on the right, there was a little waiting room, which I found a bit bizarre because I'm not sure how many patients they were ever expecting. But I put a few signs up just to keep people entertained in case they were waiting for a long time. Computer. Lots of outdated books.
Books, the library.
Some better books.
And then in here is the main hospital. So it's quite big, as you can probably hear. Got two beds and then a whole raft of cupboards, ENT, sutures, enclosure, every cream you've ever desired. Dental kits, so we've got a whole dental suite here with a dental machine unit over there and all the tools of taking out your teeth that you need. Blood taking stuff.
And then opposite there was the pharmacy, which is bigger than my kitchen. And that had the beautiful views across that mountain ridge with the clouds and the penguins and the snow.
And then the occasional fair seal who likes to absolutely scream its heart out the window. And it typically isn't doing it now. Examination.
Whereas I'd spent the first week, 2 weeks on the ship, meticulously going through every cupboard, meticulously going through every drawer, making sure I knew exactly what was there, rotating my stock. When I walked into the hospital at South Georgia, I didn't know what it looked like. I'd never been in. And instead of thinking, gosh, this hospital's lovely, what I thought was, this chap's had 4 months to unpack these cardboard boxes and he hasn't bothered to open half of them.
IV antibiotics, IV drugs, oral antibiotics, local anaesthetic, anything your heart has ever desired is kept in here.
The first day, I've met all the people the night before. They were very, very friendly and I thought, I'm going to busy myself. This is going to take me months. I think it took me maybe 2 days. Turns out, put a woman on a job, she'll get it done very efficiently. The building that the hospital's in is separate to the building that we were living in, but the build team, so the South Georgia government employer build team, they were living in this building. And I hadn't met them yet. So I was halfway through cleaning and tidying and sorting. And in come what sounds like a rugby team. Turns out it was just 4 men, but how they can make quite so much noise. Shortly followed by a football being absolutely booted into the hospital. And that was their way of saying, hello, doc.
The noise you want aren't here.
I did notice it was a bit quiet tonight. Just say your name so I know the volume's good.
Sam.
Cool. Hi, Sam.
Hi, Rachel.
Thank you so much for talking to me. What's your job title on base? All right, what do you do on base?
I'm one of the electricians with the building and heritage team. We look after the buildings and the whaling stations, carry out surveys and minor repairs to stop various things leaking out of tanks.
Even though most of it's like crumbling and falling down.
Yeah, they're very, very dangerous and yeah. You shouldn't go near them.
I have not been near them, just as a disclaimer. You don't work for the Antarctic Survey, you work for the government.
No.
And then you physically live in a different house to me as well, don't you?
I do, yes.
And it's like the A-team versus the B-team?
The A-team, like the definitely been this one.
You've not been... this is your first time to South Georgia?
It is, yes.
What did you know about South Georgia before you came?
It's part of the British Overseas Territory and was involved in the Falklands War.
See, that's kind of more than I knew, if I'm honest. How is your job different here than it would be in the UK?
The rules are the same. We do the same job. We're working with people that we live with, so we have to be more courteous, perhaps. It has to be said that after we've rewired and cleaned everything, it was better than it was before. Particularly the doctor's rooms are really dirty.
I've just kicked you. And then the other cool thing that I wanted to mention was you made a bowling alley. Well, you didn't make it.
No, we helped the team.
There's a bowling alley in a whaling station.
Yes.
I think we might go on Monday if you're up for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it might be my birthday.
Oh, is it your birthday?
Yeah, I'm 21.
21 again?
Yeah.
How many times have you been 21?
How do you manage to sleep when there are so many seals making so much noise outside the window? Because I've not cracked that one.
We get used to it.
Do you? So I'm struggling to sleep because there is an elephant seal outside the window making the most horrendous noise.
South Georgia is one of, undeniably, the most beautiful places in the world. And I know it sounds foolish, having not been everywhere in the world, to say it's the most beautiful place in the world, but there is absolutely no doubt in my mind. Because it's got the best wildlife.
Hi, seal. Yes.
The best weather.
Has it been properly cold here yet?
No, we've had 26 degrees. Shorts and t-shirt.
And the best scenery that you could ever combine?
It was definitely a rainbow in the dark.
So me describing it in audio will never do it justice. You hear it before you see land. So you'll start to see in the water the animals. You see the penguins, you see the albatross. It's like a warm-up to the main events. It builds the anticipation before you get to the island. Is that it just erupts out of the sea. It's something like 1,500 kilometres from the Falklands, which in itself is remote.
I came down initially for the wildlife, I think, as well as a bit of a sense of adventure, but people come down initially for different reasons.
Jerry, I want to do you justice by introducing you properly, but I don't know how. He was the kind of guy who wore shorts in every weather. He's measured, he's joyful, and he's just so knowledgeable. He does Bass justice. He is Bass in a nutshell.
So of all the people I've got to speak for the podcast, I feel most nervous about talking to you, Jerry, because if there was a competition for, like, Mr. South Georgia, you would win it? can you just tell me your name and what your job is?
I'm Jerry Gillam, and I'm station leader here at King Edward Point.
This is not your first radio, is it? How many times have you been here?
This is my third stint as station leader.
Okay.
Prior to that, I was at Bird Island for about 3 years as well.
So this is more home than the UK?
Than back home, yes, absolutely. It is. It feels that way now.
And I can see why. I mean, this place is much nicer.
I've got a nice enough house in the UK.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question. Like, what's the purpose of the base here?
We're a British overseas colony. The other reason for being here is science, which is Bass's big part of its reason for being.
Do you miss doing the science? Because you started off as a...
zoologist working on Bird Island. So I was hands-on with the penguins and the petrels.
Getting nipped and pooed
getting
on.
Getting cold and bitten and scraped and scratched. Yes, yeah, yeah. Yes, I do miss that. And basically the opportunity came up to do management, and it was a good opportunity to get to other stations and keep coming down here and do other things. Well, yeah, yes, very much.
Like, my job's quite obvious. I fix people when they break, and down here that doesn't happen very often, touch words. Most of it's training, but your job is bizarre.
It's a lot of everything, I think. So things like field guide training, taking people out in the hills. This week I've been counting all the food in store and then putting in the order for next year.
And it looks beautiful down there, by the way.
It's fantastic. I really hope no one touches anything for the rest of the year. I'm responsible for everyone's safety overall. So although the boating officers take the lead with the boating, I've got to be aware of all their decisions and things like
so
this.
You're still in control of all of their stuff, even though they are.
But yeah, it's a job that encompasses a whole lot of stuff. I might be stuck in front of the computer for a day, but then also I can be out in the field or doing something practical on station. Stuff that if you found yourself doing it in the UK, you wouldn't expect the manager of the place to be doing it. But that's part of what I like about life down here, is that everyone has to take their turn cleaning the toilets and things like this. Yeah. And doing the cook. And
there's no hierarchy. Everyone has to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. It doesn't matter what your job is. Everyone's as important as everyone else.
The other thing I wanted to bring up with you was your role on, was it International Women's Day or was it Women in Science Day?
It was International Women in Science and Engineering Day.
Yeah.
And I was on cook. So nailed it.
So I arrived on South Georgia in busy season, so be prepared. There was a lot of people there when I got there. There were two government officers, there was five builders, there was a range of scientists, electricians, plumbers, that sort of stuff. There was, and I've totaled it up, 23 people. Bearing in mind how sad I was when the ship left, there was actually only 26 of us on the ship. Going from 26 people on the ship to 23 people on an island didn't feel hugely intimidating at all.
John, what should we talk about?
So, thank you very much for agreeing to sit and talk freely against your will.
No problem.
Four of them were girls, which doesn't sound like a lot, but again, I've been on the ship and there was only three girls, so I was kind of expecting the same thing. Got Vicky, she's the post lady.
Your Antarctic heroes, your strong independent women. You're
not... Now you've made me really nervous. So I'm Kate.
It's Kate, who did a lot of the science with seals and also with some of the seabird and nesting bird populations.
I'm a ZFA, so that means I get to survey the seals and the penguins and sometimes the birds. And I work a lot with Megan.
Hi, I'm Megan.
Megan was the fisheries scientist. I suspect she will be the next David Attenborough.
Megan had the best introduction. I feel like we should have practiced.
Yeah, we should go around to me.
And then Sarah.
I'm comms.
Sarah works for Bass and she is head of comms.
Technically, I'm communications engineering. So it's cooler.
Leader of the satellite communication system that keeps the sub-Antarctic island alive and afloat.
So she was there to install a new communication system for all of the monitoring, for the weather station and for base communications as well.
And I heard Sarah's getting a sat dome named after her.
Yeah, I did hear that. There's a small golden statue on the top, but that always faces the sun.
And I'm not saying they replaced Mandy, but they made Mandy leaving. She left, I left, I think, much more tolerable.
So we're all here for very different reasons, but equally, I think things on base are very dynamic. So a lot of people help out with other people, maybe always in constructive ways, probably not. So Sarah, you're chief comms woman. So if I send an email from here to Basmo back in Plymouth,
yeah,
what route does it take?
It goes from here to the VSAT dome, across up to a satellite that's a long way away, like 36,000 miles, whoa, back down to Spain, and from Spain it goes to Pablo, he checks it, reads it, it goes from Spain, it goes along a fibre optic cable that's under the sea, all the way back to Cambridge, and then from Cambridge it goes out to the internet, and from the internet it goes to wherever you're
sending
the email. And then it goes all the way back again.
And then being so remote, you have to have backup systems, right? So if that fails, what's your backup?
Our backup system is the Iridium, which is the same kind of thing, but the satellites are orbiting and they're a lot lower down, so they're a lot closer to the Earth. And there's 67, to be precise. whereas the VSAT, there's only one that we point at.
Would you say that when you're on the Iridium outside, you look like you're on Trigger Happy TV?
Yeah, I think I look really cool.
Oh, yeah, so there's like 80 cool phones, aren't they?
You have to like pull out the antenna. Yeah. Massive antenna. So if you ever see it in films, when they're on a satellite phone, they're inside the middle of a ship, they're lying, because they can't see the sky. You need to see the sky, you need to have the antenna up.
So, Megan, other than being a doctor, chief cannulator, comms guru, cook, cleaner,
cook and cleaner.
It's National Women's Day.
Just naming all of the jobs. Firewoman.
Yeah, I can do that too.
You're also fisheries queen.
I don't think I've ever been called fish queen before.
I did find it. Maybe Bass will change the job title. Yeah. Fish queen.
Yeah.
Fish queen.
Yeah, my contract.
So when the Pharos came in, did they bring you stuff?
Yeah, so the Pharos brings me a plankton trawl probably about every 6 weeks. And it's been going for about 20 years now, so we've got a really long, robust data set of the composition and abundance of organisms that are all in like Cumberland Bay, and we also go survey a bit further up the island as well. There's fishing vessels in the area and they drop off samples for us, and one of the main samples is otoliths, so it's fish ear bones.
How big are fish ear bones?
Like that big.
What's that,
like 2 centimetres? The ones that we're interested in are the Patagonian toothfish. They've got ear bones, so these otoliths basically rest on either side of their brain in small cavities. So they're the same as us. They've actually got 3 ear bones, but we're interested in the main otolith, which is the biggest one that you can see, the one that you can usually pick out with a pair of tweezers. The other two are quite small and fragile, so they usually dissolve as you crack the head open, really.
Wow. Ask Megan how big the toothfish are, though. That's cool.
It's probably the size of all of us in this room.
I mean, the radio doesn't know that there's only 4 of us in this room. And we're all very slim women.
Really thin.
And cool. So they can grow up to 2 metres long. Yeah, they can live, probably up to 50 plus years. This is what we use the otoliths for. So when the fishing vessels come drop off the otoliths for us, we process them in a way that we're able to read how old the fish that were caught.
No.
Sort of like the same way you'd read how old a tree is by the number of rings in its trunk. Is that same process that you do with the fish otoliths? That way we know sort of what age fish we've removed, and then that then goes into the catch quotas for the next following year. So
that's amazing. That's blowing my mind.
Yeah.
So fish don't have ears, but they can hear.
I think it's all a bit up in the air if they can hear or not.
This is a big day.
How's it different from being a doctor on the ship?
The difference with the hostel on the JCR and on South Georgia, if you wanted to pop and see the doctor on the ship, you could creep up a number of staircases and creep into the hostel without being spotted. If you wanted to go and see me in the hostel on South Georgia, it was super obvious because there was nothing else over there apart from some living quarters. And I realised that might put people off going to ask you for help. And obviously, if you've stubbed your toe, you've got no shame. But if it was at all personal, you just didn't want people knowing your business, it was quite obvious that you were going over to the hostel. So I tended to base myself over there, a bit like I did on the ship, for a couple of hours, did a clinic, you know, I'd sit there with the door open, heating on, obviously. And then I would walk around and try and catch everyone doing their work. So I would go around them and say, oh, how are you getting on? You know, any troubles? I know I shouldn't really come and see you, but here we go, home visit. Make a bit of a laugh about it. Also a good way to see if everyone's doing their job or not. On base, everyone forms a medical team if there's an issue. Whereas on the ship, I had my set crew. Every single person, every Friday, would come to the dock school and you would have to deliver some teaching.
Slip lamp, x-ray machine. Oxygen.
We'd done all of our first aid stuff. I thought, let's have a bit of fun and I'll show them how to use this slip lamp. There's a good few junior doctors in a hospital who would love to have that kind of teaching. Go to the Antarctic, I'll teach you there. So the best way to use it is to give someone some dilating eye drops. So I said to everyone, come on over, we're going to do eyes. Bring a pair of sunglasses. So everyone then put these drops in their eyes, dilate their eyes up, and we use the slit lamp to have a look through the different layers of the eye, and everyone's, oh, it's really cool, I can see the retina, I can see the lens, or I can see the anterior chamber, really cool stuff. What I'd forgotten to tell them, but I did know, is that then their pupil would be dilated for quite some time after that. So for the next 3 days, everyone on base was wearing sunglasses, regardless of the time of day. Someone was cooking dinner that evening wearing their sunglasses inside because it was just so painful. I did realise at that point that everyone trusted me enough to just put these drops in their eyes without me explaining to them what the side effects would be. But they did bring sunglasses, so maybe they did listen.
Right, we are.
What are you looking at there?
Recording.
What's it do?
So it's just, it's telling me if okay. So I'm talking too loud, so I need to. Hello?
Hello.
See? Much better.
Good. Yours is still really loud.
Oh, shit, sorry. I am quite loud. How about now? See, much better.
Cheers.
Hi, John. Thank you for agreeing to talk to me.
It's a pleasure, Rachel.
My concern is that you are so interesting that we need to put a time limit on this, but luckily it is dinner soon.
It's 55 minutes till dinner, so...
Oh, my God.
Soon.
You know we can fill that time, though.
I feel like I'm in a psychiatrist, so...
I would be the worst psychiatrist. I'd just start talking about myself.
Tell me about your day.
So John Dickens, we were extremely lucky to have on South Georgia for a part of our season. He is a well-renowned marine biologist, photographer and expedition guide. If you watch Blue Planet, he's almost always credited at the end. A lot of the photography stuff is his.
So do you have a job title here?
No, I think at the moment I'm a research assistant,
oh.
I guess.
What was your primary objective?
I was investigating the effects of the A68 iceberg on the local fauna, particularly the penguins.
The problem being?
So the big worry was that the iceberg was going to end up grounding itself off the east coast of the island.
Mm.
The iceberg at that stage was bigger than South Georgia itself. So had it grounded, it would have completely blocked the foraging paths of the penguins and the seals. If that happened, there could have been mass mortality across the eastern side of the island, which is home to hundreds of thousands of penguins.
It would have been really bad. But there wouldn't have been much we could have done about it.
Nothing that we could have done.
And then since arriving, that iceberg's kind of broken up, hasn't it?
Yeah. None of the disaster worst case scenarios have come true.
So just by being here, you've broken up an iceberg?
I don't know about that, really.
But you've been doing lots of other stuff.
Yeah, so I came down with GPS tags. The main aim was to see where these penguins were going to feed. If the iceberg was in the way, how would they get around it? They wouldn't be able to. Would they go under it? They wouldn't be able to. So where would they go? What would they do? Mm. At the start of the year, so in the austral summer, between October and March or so, is when most of the animals come to South Georgia to breed. Mm-hmm. Some of the penguins start nesting at the end of October, others a little bit later. So all of the adults would have been on chicks at the time that the iceberg might ground itself.
So that would have been the worst time.
But with the ice breaking up, we were still interested to see where the penguins were going. All of this adds into the long-term data that we collect to see what's going on. So we stuck GPS tags on macaroni penguins and king penguins. Those penguins are out at sea now, busy foraging. And every time they return to land, there's a small base station, which is just a little box with an antenna on it. And these tags will talk to that box and deliver all of the data of where the penguins have been. On my way out, when I leave South Georgia, I will go and pick up these boxes and they should hopefully have all the data.
That'd be so interesting to know how deep they've been, how far they've been.
So there's been that. Yeah. And I've also been flying a drone quite a lot to do aerial surveys of penguin colonies. I received a map with a whole bunch of dots of where the penguin colonies might be. And I've been going out to look for them.
And how true was that map?
Not very accurate. There's quite a few colonies that are no longer there. Oh. It looks like the gentoos have had a particularly bad year.
So then you fly the drone, you literally just do sort of mapping of regions, and then how do you tell how many penguins there are?
From the images that I take, all of those are then stitched together. Then it's a matter of trying to count everything. And there are a few different ways to do it. You can do it manually, which is what I did previously for the elephant seals.
Sounds very labour-intensive.
Which is a lot of clicking. When you've got a beach that's got about 14,000 elephant seals on it,
then
you've got to click on every single one of them. It takes a while. But there are AI systems that are being developed, which will hopefully make life a bit easier.
So I find your job exhausting because it's not a case of just popping to the next door beach, is it? You do a lot of walking.
Yeah.
Exhausting.
Great. Best job in the world.
I was going to say, what keeps making you come back? Because you could go to, like, the Seychelles and count fish there.
Well, I did that.
And?
Yeah, it was good. I was there for 6 months.
So casual about it. Yeah, it was all right.
Yeah. No, I did turtle work in Seychelles for 6 months.
Oh, nice. What made you come to the Antarctic then? Or sub-Antarctic?
I was doing a master's degree in conservation biology. Mm. And that was at the University of Cape Town. And I'd always thought about Marion Island, which is a South African island. It's about 2,000 kilometres southeast of Cape Town. That had always been on the radar for me.
Like the ultimate place for conservation and...
Well, there was just a job advert for somebody to go and study killer whales, so...
Oh my God, it sounds like, you know, the kid that wants to be an astronaut. You see the advert for, do you want to go and look at killer whales? Hell yes.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
I applied for that and I went to Marion Island for 14 months. To work with killer whales, elephant seals, fur seals. Then the Bird Island job working for bass, that was almost a direct transposing what I'd been doing on Marion to South Georgia. So I was there for 18 months. And South Georgia is just an absolutely incredible place.
Yeah.
It's so special. And there's so few places in the world where you've got wildlife like this.
So we dropped you guys off, when was it, last week?
Thursday?
I think so. At Penguin Bay, two scientist chaps, they were on shore. We dropped them off. They were doing whatever it is they needed to go and do. Mm. And you were off flying your drone, having a lovely time, when our lovely boating officer, Charlie, radioed. And we were on the jet boat. And we'd retreated back a little bit, because obviously the jet boat can't go into shore quite as deep as the rib. So Charlie was further in, and myself and Andy were on the jet boat.
I'm Andy, and I'm one of the boating officers down here.
So Charlie radioed, and I went down to radio him back, and there was no response. And then I had probably the scariest encounter of my life. We heard this almighty noise. It sounded like a really big huff. And then I looked out the window, big, huge, slithery thing went underneath the jet boat and saw what can only be described as a dinosaur. This huge, slithery thing made a beeline for Charlie. And it was a leopard seal. Now, I don't know a huge amount about leopard seals other than the fact that they're particularly rare, ferocious and aggressive. They've got long, slender bodies with quite big tummies, probably from all the penguins they eat. And then these long, snarly faces with quite jagged teeth. and these eyes that tell a story.
And they have killed people. The next, like, 2 hours of my life was pretty tachycardic, I think, sweaty, clammy.
They're very curious creatures. They'll come along, they'll look around, they'll check out what you are. I've never had them having the nibble on the rib tubes before on the inflatable parts.
So Andy quickly got on the radio. Charlie, Charlie, look over your shoulder. And Charlie, who's a big chap, 6'2", quite a stocky chap, let out a very high-pitched squeal and then stood on top of the centre console of the rib with an oar, as if he was going to defend himself against this 3-metre beast.
I have seen other boats where they've had patches put on them after the leopard seal teeth has gone through the inflatable bits.
So the leopard seals, they tend to come up to South Georgia for their winter holidays. They typically breed on the ice around Antarctica. The youngsters come up here to learn how to hunt, and the
adults...
They
were young ones. They were massive.
They're not usually around as much as they are at the moment. There's been long-term research on them done at Bird Island, so they've got lots of spots on their fur, which is why they're called leopard seals. And you can tell individuals apart based on these spots.
The problem is, if Charlie put his engine into gear, he was at risk of damaging this beast. And obviously you don't want to damage the wildlife. That's not why we're there at all. So instead, we just had to watch Charlie stay very, very still and defend his boat and himself without doing a single thing at all. The other problem being is these two chaps were on shore. So at some point we had to A, alert them without worrying them, and B, get them from shore. So instead of getting Charlie to anything, we sort of moved the jet boat around enough to still interest in this leopard seal. And he did sort of sneak and snake his way towards us, and we were in a steel boat. It was okay. In Andy's mind, he's now very interested in me on the back of this boat, and he almost spy hops up, looks me in the eyes, growls. Maybe my memory is worse than it actually was, but I felt like he growled into my soul, then flopped back down again, and I could hear his teeth biting against the metal hull of our jet boat. He eventually lost interest because I think he realised that we weren't particularly tasty to eat. And he then displayed some really unusual behaviour, which we did then send across to our colleagues at Bird Island.
When you were on the shore, I think the first leopard seal brought us a little fur seal puppy because it seemed to like nudge it towards us. It didn't really kill it because it was still moving. Nudged it towards us. Obviously, we didn't eat it. And then it brought another one along. Is that pretty rare or...?
The behaviour that they were displaying, they weren't being aggressive at all. And I could see that from them right away when I came onto the boat.
I'm so glad you are saying this because I was so tacky.
They have been known to bring prey to photographers underwater.
Wow.
So, yeah, I think they were just offering... It was offering quite cool. You some prey.
I didn't know what to do because it was like he'd brought me a present, but I wasn't going to reach in and take it.
Yeah.
This moment went from being quite scary and quite intimidating to all of a sudden being this beautiful part of nature and the animal kingdom in front of me. And I suddenly thought, I'm no longer terrified. I think I'm honoured.
I wish I'd been on that boat. I mean, that's such a rare encounter. I've worked with them for a year and a half, 2 years, and I've never had anything like that. Oh my gosh. So I just wish I was on that boat.
So you are Mr. Seal in my world. When I first got here, I was, I think, terrified as an underestimate of how scared I was of fur seals, because they're these big 400-pound machines with teeth full of bacteria that charge at you. But I have learnt to love the puppies. I think the mums are quite cute. Luckily, the dads are away. Because you worked with them a lot on both Bird Island and Marion. Tell me about their, like, behaviour, because it's really very interesting.
So historically they were hunted horrendously for their pelts. They made nice coats. The population was just about eradicated. There were only about 600 left on South Georgia, which is pretty crazy to think that there's now, I think current estimates are about 5 million.
I mean, it feels like there's 5 million at KEP, I'm not going to lie to you.
They have to come ashore to breed, and the females come ashore to give birth. So that made it really easy for sealers to come along and just slaughter hundreds of thousands of animals. At about the end of October, the males come ashore and they establish territory on the beach. I think they're about 2 metres by 2 metres. They will fight each other to the death to defend these territories. The females arrive a little bit after that and they give birth to a single pup. and the males try and herd as many females into their little territory as possible. They can have up to like 20 females in this tiny little territory.
And they have
territory.
To constantly try and keep them in their little circle.
Yeah.
So the females can try and leave, but will they get aggressive with the females?
They do get a little bit aggy with them sometimes. Turns out that even though the males try and keep females within their territories,
yeah,
the females will actively seek out the most genetically diverse male on that beach.
How do they know that?
So while the males are keeping the females on the beach, and it might appear to us at the start that the males are in full control of which females they're mating with, it's the females who are choosing the males that they want to mate with.
So Beyonce's right. Girls run the world.
There you go.
Wow. Yeah. How do they know which guy's got the most?
Could be through smell. I think that was the most likely idea.
That's incredible.
So there's a Nature paper you can go and read if you want.
If we had internet, then I would consider doing that. Mm. But we don't.
The females will suckle their pups for about a week, and then they'll start heading out to sea to go and forage. They then come back between every 4 days and every week to suckle the pups. It's quite cute, and it keeps us awake at night.
They make the cutest noise, don't they?
I don't know if it's the cutest noise at 2 o'clock in the morning when a female's just arrived back on shore and she's screaming for her puppy.
And it's quite a human scream.
Mm.
Is one of them. That's the one down there.
Mm-hmm. So you've got the female calling, and then you've got her pup calling, and then she calls and the pup calls, and they get closer and closer and closer. And finally there's the recognition that, oh, this is mum or this is pup. And then they smell each other. That's the final key. And then there's a big reunion, and they're all happy to see each other.
Oh.
Pup will suckle for a few days, and then mum heads back out to sea, and the whole thing starts again. So during that time, the pups are left on their own to just get up to mischief.
They're so naughty.
They form these gangs, and they just run around in big gangs, biting each other and fighting and playing and learning how to be a seal.
They are super cute, though.
Oh, they absolutely
They'll start chasing you, and then they'll realise you're much bigger than them, and then they'll stop and run away. So if there's a seal running towards you, what's the best thing to do?
You should usually carry a stick with you.
Mm-hmm.
We call them bodgers. Typically a broom handle. The best thing to do is to give them a little prod on the chest.
Mm-hmm.
They're really solid animals, so a prod on the chest isn't going to do them any damage. And then tickle their whiskers a bit, and that should...
And they hate it, don't they?
Yeah, not too keen on that.
Yeah.
I leave South Georgia in about a week.
Oh, not ready for you to go, John.
Yeah, so soon.
Too soon.
I'm not ready either. And I don't know if I'll be back. I might be.
Gosh.
I think I probably will be at some stage.
Of course you'll be back. You'll miss the seal.
Oh, yeah. I found the other day, I went for about pretty much the whole day until the evening, not even finding myself thinking about COVID, which is just one of those things. Like, I got to the end of the day and was like, ah, that was a really good, oh, yeah, COVID's still happening out in the real world.
Yeah.
And you're just completely removed from all of that.
Mm.
And we're on this little island with 20 of
us. There's 20 of us. Yeah.
And we can all interact and mingle and...
Yeah. I mean, it's a dirty secret that we can hug.
Yeah.
After this, we could hug.
Yeah.
We probably will.
Probably.
And that's okay.
Mm, yeah. And you've got that, but at the same time, you've got that slight guilt that people in the real world are having to go through what they're going through.
Mm.
But, yeah.
We're the safest people.
We are.
Hi there, Sarah. Just doing a pre-match catch-up. Just describe to me what your boat's made out of.
It's made out of VHF antenna.
That is very clever.
Representing comms.
Wow.
The annual South Georgia Regatta was a highlight in our summer calendar.
And just describe to me just how enormous this is.
It is taller than me, 6 foot, 7 foot, 8 foot.
It took days, if not hours, of preparation for most people.
John, tell me about your contraption.
It took quite a while to eat the two wheels of camembert.
I've been through all the boating kit and I've sorted out to make an inflatable boat for it.
Amazing. And when I get into the actual rib, it won't sink because you've not used parts from that.
I've not touched the engine. That would seem a bit heavy for it.
Some people took minutes of preparation.
You've gone for an alternative, mate.
Yeah, it's going to go backwards, apparently.
Just tell me, what's your boat made of?
It's made of stainless steel and it's probably going to sink.
What makes you think it's going to sink?
It's quite heavy.
I ended up making several boats because I felt like people weren't taking it seriously.
Hi, Sam. Just tell me about your contraption.
Well, it's kindly made by you. So if it sinks, I hold no responsibility.
I would say it's slightly better than my own boat.
Vaughan on base took the afternoon off work and we went up to a place called Gull Lake, which is a man-made lake just above Gritviken.
Okay, if everyone's about ready, we will launch them at basically the same time. If you want to wade in a little bit to get past this, so swimming. The keel actually isn't scraping on the bottom.
How far can we wade in?
So long fuckers on the back of this.
Hey. Right. As well,
right? Ready?
And on the countdown of
3, 2, 1.
Oh, fucking hell.
We released our boats. Problem was, we were all extremely terrible at building boats or predicting the wind up there.
Have you never sailed before? That all sailing boats look like that.
Yeah.
Slightly on the wall.
I mean, it did better than it did earlier. It was sinking this morning.
Mine's pointing the way that I don't want it to go, and that's how sailors tend to sail. Yeah.
I'm not sure what's going to happen.
I mean, they will make it to the other side.
Or back to this side,
or back to
whichever.
I'm annoyed that Sam's is doing better than mine.
Well done.
Well done.
The person that won had the most terrible boat. I think it was made out of half a olive oil carton with a paper bag on the top.
Extra Virgin is the name of your boat. Very good. Yeah.
I, however, had spent days crafting a handmade wooden trimaran with a sewn sail.
I just really enjoyed using lots of tools in the woodwork. Like, I just enjoyed drilling holes, sanding stuff, cutting stuff.
And then I thought it was rubbish, so I gave it to someone else and made a new one. It's a glacial lake, so the glaciers feed this water. The water then goes through to an hydroelectric dam, which then feeds the base electricity. As a result, there's no wildlife in this lake, but you can't obviously litter. So we all had to go back to Gull Lake each day to go and collect whatever boats had drifted up on the other side of the lake for about a week.
Sarah, how do you plan on getting yours back?
I guess I'm just going to have to swim for it.
Can you just say you were going to swim?
Does anybody want some camembert?
You got to go swim.
Right, come up yourselves.
Did you say there's a jail there? What's that for?
The jail was originally built back in the early 1900s, probably for jail reasons, and I think there was only a handful of people ever imprisoned there. Nowadays, it's used to house chocolate. You don't get very many rations there. Chocolate and crisps are a commodity, a bit like prison. You get one lot of them delivered by the ship, the JCR, and that has to last you almost the whole season. So what they do at the beginning of the season, now obviously I wasn't there, it's Doc Dave, he would have counted every single bag of crisps, every single item of chocolate or sweets, entered them into a spreadsheet, then divided that by the amount of months in a year, and then each month worked out how many people were on base and divided that number by the amount of people to work out who got what each month. It sounds very complicated, but it was an extremely serious responsibility for the doctor on base. I think because if it was anyone else, they would have argued with it. I don't know. It felt like something I wasn't prepared for. A bit like the clouds. This was not a responsibility I was ever trained for. When I found out that the James Clark Ross was coming back to South Georgia a second time after it dropped me off, I was straight on that phone.
Hello.
Hello.
And I phoned Mandy.
Oh, finally.
I said, Mandy, this doctor needs a supply drop-off. She knew what I meant. I didn't need to spell it out to her.
Did you manage to hide your chocolate stash?
Oh, yeah, it's in the hospital box, labelled FFP3 masks for COVID.
Well, she delivered on that promise, because obviously we weren't allowed to touch each other or leave the ship, because the ship was literally flying by. A box was given to me. What she'd done is she picked up all the chocolate no one else wanted from the ship, shoved it in this box. If anyone wanted 30 packets of Bourneville, I was now the courier. So I then spent the next like 2 or 3 months trying to get rid of this dark chocolate Bourneville that no one else wanted either.
Oh my God, it was like literally the best when you guys did a flyby the other day. I felt like I was hugging you without actually hugging you.
I actually get a wee bit emotional, I'm not going to lie.
Did you have a little
I really wish I could just come down and hug you. I did. I actually did.
I need to go and check on the chicks. So just outside the hospital, you know there's that colony of king penguins?
Oh, yeah. Are they still there?
Yeah, two of them are on chicks, but they're not in that like nice fluffy stage. They're in the bit where they look like little dinosaurs.
Oh.
So just outside the surgery, there are two king penguins who have two little chicks. And all the other king penguins have just stood around. Molting, resting. And every now and again, they'll come over. The penguin chicks are beautiful. Before they hatch, they put the egg on their feet, so the king penguin will just sort of tuck their tummy over it, and you'll just see this little egg poking out the bottom on top of their feet. And eventually these two eggs hatched, Chaz and Dave, and they were lovely, and they've got this very different call to an adult king penguin. They've got a really high-pitched and every time I was in the hospital, I could hear them because that noise was just so different to all the other noises. And I knew they were there. They knew I was there. And we had this lovely relationship. They probably don't know about it, but I would go out and have my coffee on the bench and watch them. Every time their parent would come out of the water, they'd greet each other. And the adult penguin would bend down and they would nod at the baby. And the baby would nod at the adult. And they'd do this sort of ritual of nodding and standing back up again and nodding and standing back up again. And then a bit of nestling into each other. It was really lovely. And there was such a lovely pair of chicks to look at. And then one day, this wasn't a wonderful thing to watch anymore. I was sat in the surgery. I was typing away. And I heard this almighty ruckus out the window. And a giant petrel, ugly birds, smell beautiful, ugly birds, was trying to get to Chaz and Dave. Now, all the other penguins had formed a circle of trust around these two chicks. So they would like, they sort of encircled them. And this jeep was sort of trying to get through. And the other penguins were getting a bit slappy and sort of pushing them away. And I couldn't leave the window. Now, I couldn't go out there because part of the idea of living out there is that you don't intervene. It is what it is. Very hard to do when you're invested in Chaz and Dave, I would say. So I'm now watching these penguins. This jeep is like circling around and these adult king penguins are getting a bit slappy and I thought, oh God, what can I do? At some point I had to go and boil the kettle because I think I've been staring out the window for an hour or two. I came back. The circle of trust had been broken. There was only one chick there. The other chick had been taken by the giant petrel and was being dragged into the water. Now, I'll spare you the details, but that was the end of Chaz or Dave. I'll never know which one was which. And I've never felt so bereft in all my life for something that didn't know I even existed. Dave or Chaz, or whichever one was left, met a similar fate a few days later. I actually couldn't go into the hospital through that door for at least 2 days because just going up those stairs reminded me that Chaz and Dave once were. My heart actually broke. What's worse is Sam was in the building at the time and I was screaming, Sam, get out there and tell him off. And when he didn't interrupt and the bird died, I was really cross with him.
What's been your favourite thing about South Georgia? I feel like this is an exit interview rather than like a...
Yeah, and here's where we say you're fired.
So, we are fired.
It's not how it works.
No, it's when we get back to the UK.
Hang on a minute.
All
right. So you're paid to get home, right?
Yeah.
Job. You can apply for it.
I'm going to go a long detour home.
So by the time I'd been there for about 4 or 5 weeks, this team of 23, we then became a team of 7. So the Pharos came in, and it's the working fisheries vessel for the Falkland Islands of the South Georgia government.
Right, no one wave for a second, and then all of us wave and see who moves back. Okay. 3, 2, 1. Wow, no, we got the whole crowd there. Bar Sam.
At the end of summer, most of those 23 people, bar us 7 that were staying for winter, boarded the Pharos and headed back to the Falklands. Our friends and comrades boarded the Pharos and it silently drifted away, not quite as silently as the JCR, I might add. How do you feel about the team going forward?
I don't know how we've went this long without any drama. It's ridiculous.
There's been no drama.
It's so sick.
I'll tell you about the team of 7 because we formed a completely dysfunctional family. Dave was the electrician.
Hi, Dave. Can you just tell me your name and what you do on base?
And his job was, as it says on the tin, to do all the electrical stuff. Irish, excellent hot chocolate, music tastes awful.
What made you come to South Georgia?
There was work. I'm not one of these people that dreamed about going to Antarctica their whole life. I'd seen a documentary, googled that there was a job, applied and got it.
That is amazing.
It's not as romantic as it sounds.
Actually, what's really cool is you'd never left Northern Ireland.
Well, the longest I'd been away from home was a lad's holiday for 10 days.
And then all of a sudden you're in Bird Island.
Yeah.
For 18 months.
No, only 12.
Oh, that's fine. Describe to me what it was like the first time you went to Bird Island.
I couldn't see it. Like, it was a grey day, the sea was grey, the sky was grey, there was like a fog over the water, and we got in and like we were in the bay and you could start to see rocks either side of the boat and you still couldn't see base. Bloody and then you got in, it must have been 20 metres from the end of the jetty, and you could just start to see the green of the buildings come out, and there was like 4 people standing at the end of the jetty waving at you. I was like, this is...
What did you think you'd let yourself in for?
I don't know, I was petrified, to be honest with you. Properly petrified.
Was it like that when you left as well?
The 3 scientists stay, so I was the only person that left the eye when I got on the boat, and that was soul destroying. Oh. It was really heartbreaking, like
leaving your friends.
Yeah, and it was a really sunny day when I left as well.
Oh man.
Which was sod's law.
But there was only one tech.
Yeah, it's just me.
So you had to keep the whole base running?
Yeah.
Did you sleep?
No. Not at all.
Just worried that something was going to go wrong.
Yeah, it was stressful. It's fun, but...
How does that compare to here? What does your job entail? What do you have to do?
Well, you do a bit of everything here. So there's me and a mech, and we have to support the whole base, but that means that we're doing stuff that's outside of what we would normally do. So I'm a sparky by trade. But then I also have to do refrigeration systems, which is a trade in itself. I do bits of plumbing, carpentry.
Boating.
Science, yeah.
Doctoring.
Just a little bit of doctoring, just a little bit. Yeah, you just turn your hand to everything.
How do you keep sane? Because you've done winter before. What do you do to stay sane?
Turn music up really loud.
Shouty music,
and just give it stacks. That's the only thing you can do. And also build things.
Yeah, you're pretty crafty.
You need to like write lists of things to do that you want to do, and then make sure you tick them off, and then you get that little dopamine high of being like, I've accomplished something.
What's the best thing you've made? Other than the earrings that you made for me.
I do like making jewellery. Because I just like sitting there tinkering and I don't have to, it's not hard work. You just have to sit there with a Dremel and work away. But on BI, the centrifuge broke for the scientists.
Oh, right.
And they needed one because they have to centrifuge the blood samples from the seals to split the plasma from the red blood cells.
Oh, yeah.
Because if they leave them mixed, it goes off. And I had to build a centrifuge out of a DeWalt drill. And like bits of the old broken centrifuge and stuff, and that was like a day.
That's just amazing. I was
so proud of myself.
And now
it was,
you know,
so fun. It looked horrendous, like it really was Frankenstein, but it worked. So,
Jack and they're still using it now.
No, I'm pretty sure they got one. They got one in pretty soon after. It was just to do for like 2 weeks worth of science, but
that
was my gift to the science team. That was me trying to help.
You can make any old shit.
It was so scuffed. But yeah, I was proud of the thing I've made. I was like, this has helped.
What's the best thing about your job?
Doing other people's jobs.
Yeah, okay.
Getting to do the science, doctoring, boating. Mm-hmm. It's usually the better bits.
Because actually you got to go and do the Jeep way on Green last week.
I love the Jeeps.
Jeeps are giant petrels. These birds are the ugliest birds I've ever seen. They look like dinosaurs. They've got these big bulbous bits on their beak. They're sort of quite plump and don't look like they should fly. And they're really quite aggressive.
And it's all the young ones that don't fly yet, so they just sort of flap about and just try and run away from you. And they're not fast or nimble or agile, so it's pretty entertaining.
Got visions of you chasing this fluff ball along.
Oh, they're fucking, I love them.
So everyone on base needs to take turns to cook, and today is our chief engineer cooking. That's a fair title, I think. And they are making a biryani, the old school way, but using mutton and chickpeas, I guess, for the vegetarian option. So at the pier, we've got some mutton frying off. We've got some garlic and ginger, perhaps. And then some multigorni, I can never say it right, sauce, which is going to be poured or ladled over the rice, and then it will be baked to let the rice set.
I think everyone made a conscious effort to try and talk to Bird Island as much as possible. There's only four of them on Bird Island over winter, which, when there was only seven of us, my heart went out to them, because whilst we were having a great time, half the amount of people would have been very different.
Are you okay?
They've only got one dart, they have to keep going back again.
We played darts against Bird Island and we took it in turns. I suspect there was some cheating on the Bird Island side.
Yeah, we're just popping forward. We've got the big one.
Board or dark?
There was absolutely no cheating on our side whatsoever, I promise. But an important feature in winter.
It's 1, 2, 3, and 7.
When there was just seven of us and I was the only girl on base, I was aware that Claire was on Bird Island, the only female on base as well. So we set up film nights, and I said to all the boys on base, Claire and I are going to have a film night. We're going to watch the same film as each other. I'm then going to call her afterwards and we're going to talk about the film. I said, we're going to paint each other's nails, but I'm going to paint mine and she's going to paint hers, but we're going to pretend we did each other's. And the first night we did it, it was fine. The second night we did it, a couple of weeks later, the boys kept creeping in to watch. I mean, we're watching horrendous rom-coms, the kind of rom-coms I would never dream normally of watching, but I just craved that kind of rom-com stuff. By the end, a few months in, all of the boys were watching Miss Congeniality, like proper rom-com. Some of them might have dabbled in nail varnish. I'm not going to name names. There was wine, there was nail varnish, there was rom-coms. Initially, it was for me and Claire, but I think everyone enjoyed it by the end.
On this very windy day, can you just give us an update on the SAR scenario?
Fred's fallen down the mountain. We're going to get him. Stay strong, everybody.
It's a beautiful day to save lives.
Right, so is he talking or breathing?
No. He's not talking, but he is breathing.
Right, so ABCs, airways. Right. If he's breathing, we know he's got an airway. Because he's fallen, we have to worry about C-spine. I mean, he looks like his neck's Banjax. So what Andy's doing is keeping his airway clear so we can do his check his breathing. Is the patient alert? He's not. He's breathing.
Just, he's just groaning. He doesn't say anything. He just groans.
So he's responding to pain.
He's conscious.
His airway, he's breathing, but we're worried about his neck, so that's why Andy's supporting it.
Yep.
We need to look around his body and check to see if there's any massive, really bad injuries.
That leg doesn't look great.
Yeah, if there was a broken leg we're all right with, as long as it's not pissing loads of blood out, and then we'll check it.
Medic, this is Fastfire, go ahead.
Oh, hi there, do you have an update on the casualty, Owen?
Yeah, we've just arrived. He is breathing, he's unresponsive, he's responding to pain. Looks like he's hurt his neck. He's fallen face down, and one of his legs looks in a bad position.
Right, okay, right. All understood. Would you be able to contact KP Comms, get them to bring the slow party with a stretcher, some neck blocks, some warming aids, and sort out a route off the scree slope and back to KP? I'm on my way. In the meantime, do the best you can to keep him warm, and if you can free him from any loose objects, splint anything that looks broken, and I won't be too long.
So how was Doc School, just the seven of you?
Doc School weekly event had to keep it interesting because they were no longer entertained by simple things. So I had to make it a bit more exciting. So we had a mannequin, which was often waiting in the waiting room, never got seen. He was as heavy as a real person. So rather than drag the mannequin up there, I put him in a wheelbarrow, lobbed him in the tussock because I was still a bit scared of the fur seals, ran back to base and then mimicked a real scenario with the boys. It was nice because they all took it very seriously and they did a really good job. It did make me realise just how isolated you are.
Do you want to log on?
Should we log while him onto his back? Just to free him, and there's a rock on his arm.
Right, okay, is everyone ready?
Yeah.
Ready? The command will be 1, 2, 3, roll. We will roll on the R of roll. Okay, all good. 1, 2, 3, roll.
That's excellent.
They, very cleverly, didn't bring any of the stretchers. They'd noticed that I'd taken a wheelbarrow up the track. So they walked up there and said, Doc, why don't you just put him back in the wheelbarrow that you brought him here in? So I did have to get more creative after that.
There's a Serpentine blocking our route.
He's the slow, slow party.
We have made great strides, with just over 13 million people now vaccinated in our United Kingdom, including 1 in 4 adults in England, over 90% of everyone over 75, and over 90% of eligible residents of care homes for the elderly. But that still leaves nearly 2 million people, a population roughly twice the size of Birmingham, that we still hope to reach.
May 2021.
I remember that day actually when the JCR came in. The weather had been a little bit miserable, and then that morning it was just beautiful. I got some awesome pictures of the JCR kind of coming in and amongst all the mountains.
It was suddenly something was shining down on us.
Yeah.
Anne from Basmu rang me, and in her wisdom, she told me a long, winding story about how wonderful Doc Dave had been looked after in the UK, and I was over the moon for him. But as part of this story, she told me that he was coming back.
I mean, I was in lockdown in the UK whilst I was recovering, so the only thing you could do was walk, and I couldn't walk because I had a broken ankle, so I did very little other than sit on my computer on the sofa. And then coming back to base, it was a bit of a process with kind of a month of isolation and quarantine at various different points. So it's been a lonely process to get back, but I am back now and I'm on base and it's great to see everyone.
You do look really happy.
It's good. Yeah.
I didn't say this yesterday, so maybe this is nice. You look very happy.
Thank you.
I was over the moon for him because Doc Dave's a lovely chap and it was a really devastating injury. So for him to come back was brilliant, and it was always his job. It was never my job to be on South Georgia. So it was a gift, an honour to be there. My initial plan was to board the James Clark Ross, sail from Harwich, go all the way down to the Antarctic, do this beautiful voyage round the islands, stocking up the bases, visiting the abandoned whaling bases, do the loop, visit the Falklands, and then sail the ship home. And that had already changed once, getting off at King Edward Point. And I was extremely lucky and very fortunate to do that, and very grateful that I had the opportunity. But what I really wanted to do is I really wanted to stay for the whole of that season.
I didn't have any role in Dave being pushed over.
No.
But it's funny how things work out.
It is, isn't it? We don't get the publicity of, say, Rotherhithe, because it's a bigger station, and we don't necessarily get the same as Bird Island because it's so immersed in wildlife. And because of the way it's a slightly different base here, I think we go under the radar quite a lot, which kind of suits us. Yeah. I know there were a few people who came in on the ship at first call who were thinking, oh, actually, this place is this is pretty good.
So in the Antarctic, they do this thing called midwinter. And they have a celebration which is very much like Christmas Day. In fact, most people that have been to the Antarctic and overwintered would say it's probably better than Christmas Day. And what ended up happening is Doc Dave came back to South Georgia probably a week before that date. I love South Georgia. I love the JCR. And for the idea of it to be ending was heartbreaking.
Thanks for being here. It's been really good.
I think
you've been very good in leading sort of social events, games and things like this.
Non-alcoholic ones.
Which is really good for the start of winter, I think.
Yeah, I can imagine.
No,
oh, have a great winter. I feel very jealous. I would have given my left arm to stay an extra month, an extra week. But you can't be ungrateful about these things, because every single day I was there wasn't meant to be my day, and I enjoyed every single one of them, so I'm not going to be ungrateful. But Anne, if you could have delayed that by a couple of days, that would have been lovely.
You'll be sorely missed, no doubt.
I think you'll be all right. I then got on the Faroes. They've got a job to do. They're not just a taxi service for the South Georgian employees. Research had meant that we now had a COVID vaccine, in such that the COVID vaccine had even made its way south to the Antarctic. So it had been shipped all the way down to the Falklands and was making its way around the bases. So I was lucky enough to be able to give the staff on South Georgia the COVID vaccine. I also gave it to those on the Faroes, and then we even took it to Bird Island, and that really cheered me up. So I wasn't allowed to touch the Bird Islanders when we dropped off the COVID vaccines because of COVID. Now, obviously, I didn't have COVID, they didn't have COVID, but just in case there was an offside chance. So what I did was I stood at the end of the jetty and I told them how to give it to each other, and I watched them do it from, what was it, 10 metres? And it sounds completely bizarre now, but back then we were all so scared, or taking it so seriously, should I say, that neither of us wanted to break those rules and have any chance of it. So I was then saying to Claire, and now put that pair of gloves on, grab a bit of flesh, the fleshy bit, and then inject. So actually, whilst I was there, they delivered each other's vaccines. So we delivered them, yeah. We went back to South Georgia, and I can't quite remember what for, something they were doing with the fisheries. We ended up going back to KEP, so I thought I was going home. I was getting closer, and then we went back again. And Dave shouted over the rail, so I'm on the Faroes. He shouted, "Hey, Doc, what are you doing this evening?" I thought, what a stupid question. I'm living on a fishing boat. He said, "Do you want to go camping?" I thought, I really do want to go camping. So when I spoke to the captain of the ship, I said, "Look, Jerry, we're not going to leave tonight, are we?" He said, "No, we're here for a couple of days." I said, "Would you mind if I spent the night off the ship, if I took a tent from the base and went camping?" He said, "No, not a problem at all," because I'm not his employee. I was there to get a ride home with him. So Dave, Irish Dave, he got the kit. We walked over this place called Myvicum, which isn't very far at all, about 10 kilometres. And we camped, separate tents, under the stars. And it was just such a lovely way to actually say goodbye to the island, rather than the first time I'd left. Was all very much, flares up in the air, oh, she's off. And then I came back. And actually, just spending a night under the stars in a tent with the mountains in the background, I could hear the fur seals at the bottom. It was really thoughtful of Dave, and whether he meant to or not, but I felt it was quite touching.
How are you going to cope with no girls?
It'll be all right.
Who are you going to have girls' night with?
I won't.
There will be just no girls' night.
There's just not going to be a girls' night. I mean, I've never done girls' night before, so I don't know what I'm missing.
Mm. Well, but good luck.
I'll just have to tough it out, kind of thing.
Yeah. Thanks, man. Thank you.
What about the JCR?
Now, I was hoping that you would be able to commentate on your last movements of the JCR for the rest of the podcast. After leaving, I managed to catch up with Mandy, who carried on the ship's journey to the Falkland Islands for its last ever time under the British Antarctic Survey. Where did you go from here? You went to...
Only the lovely Evan Stanley.
Oh, yeah. What happened in Stanley?
Oh, it was just so emotional. Like, the whole beachfront was covered in people out in their cars, flashing their lights, tooting their horns, and then all the cars were pumping and the flat lights were flashing. I thought, oh my god, this is emotional.
But despite the cold and rain, crowds of people turned out to wave and hoot horns to wish the James Clark Ross well on her long voyage back to the UK.
It was so emotional. And then in the horn and he's playing like the JCRC shanty and Blandon and God Save the Queen and that sort of shite. And oh my God, it was just too emotional.
This marked not only the end of her 5.5 month mission to deliver staff to Antarctica and resupply the stations for another year, but also the end of 3 decades of service with the British Antarctic Survey.
And do you want to know the cutest thing?
Yeah.
He got all dressed up in, like, full uniform, complete with jacket.
What, the
captain
did?
Like, he was wearing, like, full rank.
Oh my god, that's amazing.
On her final farewell sail up Stanley Harbour to Government House and back again was met with no issues as music played and the flags and paying off pennant flew. The pennant is traditionally the length of the ship, plus an extra yard for each year of service, and is flown at the end of a ship's commission.
The wee guy, he's an old man, who used to be the gangway watch thing. Sugar Mike, we call him. He's such a nice man, but he's so old and he barely walks, but he just sits there gambling and just like does the security. So he sent me a message and he was like, "Hi, it was really nice to meet you. I hope to see you again. Have a safe journey in the south." And I was like, oh. So I sent him a message back. I was like, yeah, I hope to see you at the beachfront. He's shielding. So he's like, I'm not going to come out tonight. And he's told me, like, where it roughly looked for his house. It was like...
Oh, yeah.
So he's like, yeah, we're waving from my house. And sure enough, and in this house, there was somebody...
Waving?
Hi.
Oh, my God, that's amazing. Did you cry?
I actually did. I had a wee tear in my eye. I went to the bar and take some ibuprofen and paracetamol because my shoulders were aching.
From waving?
I waved so hard. Hi. Hi. There's so many goodbyes. How many goodbyes I can take? Like... God help me when I get into Harwich and actually need to walk off this ship. I'm going to be a mess.
So, Jen, you are going to be the next doctor for the ship for the British Antarctic Survey. So I've got some things for you to hand over to you that are very important.
Oh, no.
So this is one of them. This is a handmade scrub top.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. Oh, that's fabulous.
So that's for you to know that you're in doctor mode so no one comes to bother you at the bar to tell you about their toenails.
Wow, it's amazing. It's like an African fabric.
It's lovely.
Oh, I love it. Yeah, it's great. Thank you very much.
Then I've got these for you.
Oh, some penguin face masks. This is excellent.
And then last but not least... This is the actual baton.
Very
themed. So this is a bolt off of the bottom of the bed that was nailed to the floor in the surgery of the James Clark Ross, which is now in the safe hands of the Ukrainians who bought the ship. And this is the bolt from the bed.
Oh, fabulous.
From ship to ship.
Thank you very much. I shall pass this on to the next doctor.
The thing I was most nervous about was forgetting anything.
So my advice would be to remember everything in whatever way you can.
Many lists, I think. that's the key. Yeah, many, many lists, and I should start writing them now.
Yeah, you'll have a great time.
I feel very honoured.
Have a wonderful journey.
Thank you very much.
Ring me lots. Yeah,
I will do. Yeah, probably not as much as you rang me. Yeah, I'm not that needy.
Thanks, Jen.
Oh, thank you. Oh, it's a real honour. Thank you very much.
Safe travels.
Thank you.
Bye.
Right.
Don't lose that ball. Put it in there. Oh, actually, two of these. Just
put that in there as well.
Oh, I mean, that's yours.
Oh,
to take home. And that's definitely my iPad. I've got a numb bum.
Colder Shift was presented by Dr. Rachel Varnum and Dr. Jenna Plank. It was produced by Rachel Varnum and John Wakefield. The executive producers were Claire Broughton and Laura Varnum. The studio engineer was Alex O'Donovan. Music by Blue Dot Sessions and The Windlass Project. See the programme notes. The news report on the JCR leaving Stanley was used with permission from Falkland Islands Television. Visit them at fitv.co.fk. The series was edited and mixed by John Wakefield. Thank you to everyone on the James Clark Ross and South Georgia for sharing their stories, and to the team at the British Antarctic Survey and the British Antarctic Survey Medical Unit for their permission, help and support. Also to the whole team at Hattrick, including Jimmy Mulville, Claire Broughton and Diggory Waite. Find out more about the British Antarctic Survey's crucial work at bas.ac.uk. The Coldest Shift was a Hattrick podcast. January 2026.
I didn't tell Jen, I didn't tell my parents, I didn't tell anyone that I was even leaving South Georgia. I don't know why. I think I just didn't know enough about my journey home to tell anyone about it just yet. But I did manage to tell Sam, who was one of the electricians, who was one of the build team, who'd left several months earlier, that I was potentially coming home, and he'd offered to pick me up from Bryce Norton. There isn't very much phone signal and the internet's very expensive in the Falkland Islands. So I told him, and it wasn't till I was on a runway at Mount Pleasant on the Falklands, getting on the aeroplane to come back to Bryce Norton, that I suddenly thought, oh, crikey, I haven't even told my family I'm coming home. Who's going to pick me up from the airport? Well, I hope Sam turns up. And when I landed at Bryce Norton, it's a military airport, and I'm not military. I'm very far from military. But when I got off the aeroplane, it's very efficient. It's not like getting off a Heathrow. You go through a very big terminal and that's it. You're out at the bus station. And I suddenly thought, oh, crikey. I've landed in the middle of the UK. I've not been around more than 20 people for almost a year. I don't know any of these people. And then in the distance, I saw Sam, the electrician from South Georgia, and I suddenly felt I was going to be all right again. The problem with having a relationship when you're in a very small community, and I'm sure anyone that's been in a relationship that's not worked before, is that if things don't work out, you're stuck, aren't you? You're stuck with the emotions, the fallout, anything. So it's just not worth having that when you're living in such a small community. So we very much made the decision that if you liked someone, that actually it was more sensible to just enjoy your time and not be stressed about those sorts of things. And if it worked in the real world, then that was how it was going to be. And that's what we decided we would do. So it wasn't until we got back to the UK that I thought, actually, if we get on, we get on. And I'm happy to say that we still very much get on. And that was 5 years ago. So... yeah, a happy ending to a story.
We're homeward bound, I hear the sound.
Goodbye, farewell, goodbye, farewell.
We're homeward bound, how I love that sound.
Hoorah, my boys, we're homeward bound.
Homeward bound is a joy.